Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by HVU Insider. I am Jim Galante. With me, Mike Villagrana, Executive Director of HVU Insider. How are we doing this week, Mike? We got some football games to talk about.
We do. But you know what? Bigger news is I went to the Grange Fair here for the first time in State College, and it was amazing. So for people who haven't done it, please go out and check it out. It was really, really interesting. It was just like anybody has their like fairs and their festivals, right, around their counties or whatever. But this one, you have these tents. Everybody goes out there for like a whole week, and the food is amazing. Luckily, we were there on a day that wasn't too hot. I'm a bigger guy, so I sweat a bunch, so it wasn't too hot. But yeah, I got a lot of good food. But that was awesome, and yeah, we had football this past week, which was awesome. I watched. I told you before we got on. I said I watched that North Carolina game like it was the last college game ever I was going to watch. I had my PFF account set pulled up. It was awesome. While I had literally 10 other little humans running inside and outside my my house yesterday or on Saturday, because my wife decided to have everybody over. While this is the first college game day, she asked me, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm watching football." So yeah, that's how my week went, and excited now that we have preview Marshall, which is amazing. It's crazy. It's here.
Well, we've got to prioritize things here, Mike. Okay, we got to do the important things at the fair. Fairs are about food.
Yeah.
Would you have good?
See, this is a me issue, and I totally admit it. Like when I get a menu in front of me, and it's like pages, I can't do it. There's just too many options. I'm indecisive. I'll choose one, then I'll see something on page three that I was kind of on the fence with. But then when the waiter's coming over, then I'm like going to decide. Oh, you know what? I want that one on page three. It's the same thing with the fair. Like there's just so many things. Like from the peach cobbler with the ice cream, with the stuffed pretzels, the double fried Oreos, the meatballs, everything. I saw for the first time this pretty world was the cows getting auctioned. Or no, it was goats. Goats were being auctioned. It was pretty cool. But I got a little bit more of culture from it.
Well, I'll tell you what. Here in Bloomsburg, we have a huge fair. I don't know if you ever heard of the Bloomsburg Fair, but it's like the last week in September, and it is phenomenal for the food. It's ridiculous. You would go crazy again. Your head would be spinning from all the options. But got to highlight my favorite. There's a food truck nearby that is always there. It's a barbecue food truck, and what they do is a mac and cheese bowl with your choice of meat on top.
Oh,
okay,
that's amazing. Yeah,
brisket.
Oh,
brisket on top of mac and cheese. And in fact, I see when they're around. They were around a couple weeks ago for an event. Mike, I don't even know what the event was. I don't care what the event was. I got my mac and cheese bowl with the brisket on it. Phenomenal stuff.
But
all right.
But, go ahead. You know what, though? Like, for me, my wife, like, where we grew up, like, you have to get fair fries no matter where you go, what fair you have to. And the fair fries, it's got to be a cup, not a, like a plastic or not like a paper bowl. Like, it's got to be a cup. And then you got to soak it. You got to put enough vinegar in the cup enough that there's like about a half cup of vinegar at the bottom. That's me and my wife's way of doing the fair fries. That's how you got to do them.
Well, I've talked to you often about, Berwick High School football when I was young, going, it was the French fry stand where they were real French fries. They did the potatoes right there.
Yep.
Real French fries, the absolute best. It was enough reason to go to the football game was for the French fries. So I'm with you there on that also. You know, the unfortunate thing is, Mike, you and I now, we could do this entire show about food. You know that, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think so, yeah. So, and well, you know what? And I haven't even talked about my tomatoes in a while. Those things are growing. I'm about to have like 24 aromas by maybe week 4.
Well, I got to tell our folks what we have already an arrangement made where I'm coming into town on Friday. So you got to make yourself available because I have a delivery of kielbasa for you.
Oh, yeah.
So that's our starting point. So we'll have to make sure we get together on Friday for the most critical, important thing.
Yeah.
All right. Reluctantly, I'm going to move to football. It was amazing to watch college football this weekend. I loved it. I watched North Carolina. We'll talk about that in a second. But I want to talk about Bo Prabhula. That game, Mike, I was locked into that game. I really was. And again, typical overreaction. It's the first week, and it's easy to come to conclusions. But I loved the way Bo played, and I think I loved even more the way Virginia's coaching staff used him in this game.
Yeah, that was a really fun game. I had that kind of pinned as a game that I really wanted to watch, just kind of like the UNC game. And what I got out of it, first of all, like CJ Bailey for NC State, he's got like when he flashes, he's got a bounce to him and a look to him, like he's like Lamar Jackson. But that being said, he was far from that. He did not have his best game yesterday, which is probably very frustrating for NC State because they're kind of banking on him, kind of leading them. But he doesn't have any weapons around him, so they're probably going to struggle a little bit this year just because they don't have any other weapons around them. But yeah, back to Bo, like so, like I told you before this, I was like he's not Trace McSorley. Like there's a ton of comparisons to him. I've mistaken pictures of him for Trace McSorley. They look alike so much, but on the field, he reminds me personally of somebody that I've seen in person. His name is Nick Anderson. Played for Mississippi, or sorry, Nick Fitzgerald. He was the quarterback for Mississippi State when I went to Mississippi State with Joe Moorhead after the 17 season. And he wasn't like a true quarterback, right? He was a quarterback that was recruited under Dan Mullen. You know, Dan Mullen kind of known as the quarterback whisperer. But he could run the ball. He was very smart with the ball, managed the game, had moxie. You know, he had everything that you wanted in a quarterback. But he wasn't like your pure pocket type of guy. Trace was more of a thrower to me.
Yes.
He's a game. They're both gamers. Yeah. Really impressed with him on the ground. Obviously, I think he had over like 100 yards. He had a touch. And he just managed the game well, converted the third downs, had the offensive rhythm. You know, the game is so funny because, like, even the TCU-North Carolina game, some of those plays in the first half and the second half, TCU, some of the calls, the penalties, they just didn't go their way. Like, if they go the other way, it could have – TCU probably drives down, wins, or scores, and the game's totally different. It's just such a it's such a game of inches and, like, such – it's just the details of the game is so fun to watch. And maybe I'm saying that because I watched it like it was like the last football game ever on TV. But it's, yeah, I was really impressed with Bo. And me coming from Virginia Tech at my last spot, you know, that you know, Elliott coming in wasn't really like deemed as like a real competitor. We felt like we were going to be able to out-recruit them. We were going to, you know, beat them, you know, every year. We felt comfortable, right, with that. But he is who he is. He went through that period with, you know, the casualties to the players. You know, I was part of that year, part of Virginia Tech, where we had to cancel that last game because of that. And that, I mean, That was a big thing. So you had to go through that, right? And you got to deal with, you know, it's kind of a basketball school. It's a higher education school. You have all of those different elements. And Elliot's kind of like a quiet guy. Like, he's not like a brash, rude guy. Like, he's just like a genuinely nice guy. So it's good to see that the administration was patient, which they're not these days, right? And so they were patient with him, and now they're reaping the benefits with him. The first 11-win season last year, first time they went 5-0, they should have went to the playoffs if they won that game, but lost in overtime 20-27 to the Duke in the ACC championship game. So, like, I'm happy for them, man. Like, it's a good story, right? With all the toxic stuff going on in college football, when you get something like this, it's good to see. You root for guys like that.
Well, I want to tie it into something that we've talked a bit about with this Penn State team, and we heard Matt Campbell say it. We heard Taylor Mauser say this. We are going to adapt our offense to the players we have and to their skills, their talents. I think I'm not sure I've seen recently anyone do it as well, at least for one game, with Bo Prabula. They built that offense around what he could do. The style of runs that, you know, is familiar. You know, watching them, it's like, okay, we remember some of those same kind of moments at Penn State from him. The other part to it, which I thought was phenomenal, I think they threw the ball just three times in the first half. Three times. Bo was running the ball. That's how they moved it. Credit to the analysts who talked about NC State's safeties coming into the box. So what did Virginia do? Right after halftime, too, which I also think is relevant, because that's when opposing teams make adjustments. All of a sudden, Virginia comes out throwing the ball around, threw the ball over the top, beat old friend King Mac, the safety, because he was inching up to stop the run. It was like, okay, Virginia suckered them in for an entire half, Mike, running the ball, beating them that way. And you know, at halftime, the conversation from NC State's coaching staff is, we're not going to let this continue to happen. And before Virginia even waited to feel it out in the second half, they changed the game plan. So I kind of stalled out here the finish of this quarter, because I want to give you enough time to respond to that, Mike. When we come back, we're going to do that right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free. Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by HVU Insider. I'm Jim Galante. He's Mike Villagrana, the brains behind HVU Insider. This is quarter number two of our show. And, you know, Mike, before we have you respond to my monologue to finish the first quarter, I think now's a good time to mention me, you, and our buddy Chris Buchanani. We got a new podcast going, don't we?
Yeah, we did. We did the first one last week. Long overdue. I think we've talked about it in the past, over the last year that we've been working together, at least. And then when we started working with Chris, you know, me being the noob going into it, you guys had always just made me feel very comfortable. And I just like talking to you guys, just like we opened the show up. You know, we just talk about anything, right? Like food, culture, just anything that, you know, pisses off old men at this age right now. Like, it's been great. So yeah, we got this pod. We did the first one, and things going live, should be live by today. So really excited about it. It's got a BTI feel to it. So, you know, we won't drag too long, to hopefully on each segment so we can hit, you know, a bunch of segments. And it's a different perspective from, you know, three different guys that, you know, love Penn State and come from different backgrounds and have different perspectives on things. So it's kind of cool. It should be a little bit refreshing for some of the Penn State fans. So hopefully you guys check it out.
And you could go to happyvalleyunited.com, and it's on the YouTube yeah. channel, correct, Mike? That's the HVU YouTube channel. Make sure you check it out. This coming week, we'll get two new shows out with it. A lot of fun, the first one. I'm sure it's going to be a lot of fun going forward. For listeners to Keystone Kickoff, KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. We'll have a link there to the show also. Also on our app, I'll have something in there. We'll put something in there so you could link right to it also. All right, back to our conversation about some of these games over the weekend. Mike, I was just talking about how impressed I was with the Virginia coaching staff, how they use Bo Prabhulis so well. And I was particularly impressed. First half, he was running the ball. The entire half, they only threw the ball three times. They come out in the second half, first possession, they're chucking the ball all around, over the top, after drawing the safety in. I'm very confident that's how the Virginia coaching staff drew it up.
Yeah, and you know what? To be honest, though, like, to me, I look at it as like the offense for NC State really put NC State's defense in a bind with them, because they had a game plan. You know what you're going to get with Bo. I think they, you know, had enough game tape from Penn State in the Missouri days with Bo to know who he is. And he's got limitations to him in the passing game, right? So they had a game plan for him, but it's hard to get in a game plan when your offense is going three and out. I think the first half, like, the first like four or five series went three and outs. So like that puts your defense in a tough bind, especially a defense that's coming off of a really bad season. I think they were ranked like, you know, down there in the bottom tier of like pass defense. So that didn't help them. But yeah, Bo looked great. He had enough pieces around it. What's interesting too to me is like literally like with these teams that I do now, I kind of research them, and I want to like go see the depth charts, and then I look, and not only do I want to see the depth charts, I want to know like where they came from. And because it's crazy, like when you look at it, like a lot of these guys, especially on the Virginia roster, I remember recruiting them, like the Peyton Lewis kid going to Tennessee, who's right down the road. Yeah, him going to Tennessee. Now he's back, right? Brandon Hillman was a four-star kid out of Virginia Beach, went to Michigan. That was a big thing. Now he's back there, and he had a couple big plays. I'm pretty sure he was involved in two turnovers yesterday for the Virginia defense. So Brandon Hillman was another kid. Just seeing these rosters are just crazy. Think about this too. Think about the weapons. I brought this up with CJ Bailey and the lack of weapons that he has. He had last year, NC State had their leading rusher, right, go to Texas. I totally forgot about that, right? He was the number one kid in the portal. I forgot about that. The two top receivers, one went to USC, another went to Alabama. Their best lineman went to South Carolina, and they lost their transfer portal wide receiver to a PED suspension all year. So like, I'm looking at these rosters, like, they're, like, brand new. And that's, like, and we talked about it in past episodes, but it's just – it's just a different field of college football now when you're looking at roster constructions and you're looking at them. But I kind of like had fun with it. I totally forgot King Mack was at NC State. I love King Mack when he was here, just personally. Yep. He's a great kid. I love them. So root for him. It's just a different game. And
Jalen Harvey.
Yeah. Opposite of that. I didn't realize that other number nine, I forget, he's got a funky name, but he's a freak. One of the best pass rushers in college football. I didn't know that, but yeah, Jalen Harvey on the other side. So yeah, it's just really neat going through the rosters. But yeah, go back to your question, your original question about Bo and how they kind of they kind of revolved the offense around him, and they did a great job. But again, like their defense definitely helped their offense out big time in that game.
No doubt. The other thing that I thought, well, first of all, with Bo, having a quarterback who could run the ball is such a weapon in college football. And I don't even know who that analyst was, but when an analyst agrees with me, I think they're a smart guy, okay? That's the way I watch it. But there was like a 3rd and 4, and he said, this is a situation where a Bo Pribula is so dangerous. He's a weapon. You don't have to throw the ball. He's capable of running for that first down. And you saw that. And also, once he got in the open field, hey, you could even defend it well, but he can beat people with his legs. You know, you could be in good position. We saw that multiple times where Bo beat people. The other thing to this, which is a shocking number, do you know how many carries Virginia had? How many times they rushed the ball, Mike?
I just had it in front of me, but I didn't look at that number. I'm going to guess over 25 rushes.
57 carries.
Okay. That was way off.
And the reason why I looked it up is I also wanted to talk about, and again, early in the game, they talked about, and this is my connection to Penn State, they talked about Virginia having 5 different running backs who are capable. Yeah. And I wanted to look up and see, well, gee, did they really, you know, share the ball? They had 5 running backs who each got at least 6 carries. One of them got 15 carries. It was 15, 8, 7, 6, and 6. And that's not counting the 15 more carries for Bo Pribula, so, which is just amazing. And I connect that to Penn State with at least 3 and maybe 4 running backs. Now, it's difficult to have 57 carries in a game, okay?
Yeah.
But it was
did you know this, though? Did you know it's the most experienced offensive line in the country? That they were returning. Did you know that? Did you see that?
Somebody, was it you or Chris who told us that last week? Did you?
No, I forgot. I didn't hear it if it did come up, but I saw that stat yesterday while watching. It was like 5th year, 6th year. There's 2 guys on there that was 7th years. So it just goes back to like looking at these rosters, and it's incredible.
Well, and especially up front, I think we learned over the last couple of years, teams that have won the national championship, that special sauce may be experience. You know, you're getting these men who are playing.
That's right.
So a first-year player is 18 years old, 19, and he's up against a 24 or 25-year-old man. And I got to think that matters even more at the line of scrimmage, Mike, where you talk about those offensive linemen.
That's huge. That's huge. We always talk about that, especially when we talk about recruiting, and we talk about recruiting when it comes specifically to the offensive line and defensive line, because especially now, you got to think about dead money. You know what I mean? The kid coming in, you know, like he's not you can't expect a 17, 18-year-old kid to walk in an offensive line room with 7th-year graduates and compete year 1, year 2, let alone on the other side of the ball if you're a defensive lineman, a freshman coming in and having to go up against those guys. It's just not fair. It's going to take time for you to develop. That's why offensive line and defensive line recruitment is a little bit different. It is so big. I think we saw it with Indiana last year. They had an older team, especially on the offensive line. Offensive line is a different world. You know, I always look at offensive. When I look at games, I look at offensive line out. That's what I kind of look at. You know, who's pushing who. You know, just the schemes. What are they doing? And then I kind of look outside of that. Then the tight ends. Whatever the personnel is, but yeah, like it's a different world in there. And when you have old men like that, 270, you have a 6th. I have it pulled up right now: a 7th year, a 6th year, 7th year, a 6th year, and that's not including their left tackle, who's their big time prospect, NFL prospect. Those are grown men. Those are grown men. You know, so yeah, like to your point, it's a huge difference now when it comes to offensive line. And when you're looking in the portal, do you take a young guy that has a high ceiling, or do you go in the portal that you're going to get a return on your money right away? It's a question that I think most front offices and coaches have to deal with nowadays.
They do, and it's that idea of how do you use the portal, and are there specific positions that lend itself to it? You know, hey, I could get a wide receiver who's a first-year player and put him out there on the field, and if he hasn't matured yet physically, it's okay. He's fast. He could run routes. But you talk about offensive line. Give me the 24-year-old who has been 6 years in a collegiate, training system, and he's a man against a boy.
Yeah, it's just I played the defensive line when I went into college, and so I'm a fresh, raw, green high school kid going into I'll talk about it on our next.
All right. Let's start that when we come back for quarter number three, right after this.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free. Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by HVU Insider. I'm Jim Galante. He's Mike Villagrana. It's quarter number three of our show. And Mike, we're talking about the games over the weekend, specifically where we're looking detail at Virginia, NC State, with Bo Pribula starting at quarterback. A lot of interest from the Penn State fans. But you brought up this great point about what a veteran group Virginia's offensive line was, and you were getting ready to tell a personal story that you were on the defensive line as a young player coming into football at West Virginia. So I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah, I was just putting more context on like just how different it is in the position room once you go from the high school ranks to the college ranks. In the defensive line or offensive line room, it's just different. I remember my playing days, you know, this is before, you know, you had a lot of the older guys still, the fifth, sixth, seventh year guys, which is normal, I guess, if you want to call it that. But, you know, they moved me to interior in the 3-3-5, right? So I'm 215 pounds soaking wet in high school. And so all those graduation parties, I was stacking up 3-4 plates. So by the time I got there, I was like 260, 270, something like that as a true freshman. But I remember going into that first camp and calling my mom and being like, man, I don't know if this is for me. Like, these are grown men. Like, the coaching was way different. Like, it's just a different world going into that offensive defensive line room. And even as a player, like, as I kind of, I end up moving to tight end, and, you know, you work with the offensive line a ton, at least I did. And it's just a different culture when you go in that room versus when you go into, like, a DB room, right? It's just different. But, yeah, so it's just when you have to recruit, you know, a kid that is – you know, he's wanting, you know, or the agent or whatever's asking for X amount of money. That's pretty high. Like, you really got to consider that, right? Like, should that money go to him? He's not going to be able to play with these grown men in 1, maybe 2 years, you know? Or do you go to the portal with somebody that's proven, that's hungry, that you can get a return on, you know, at a as a cheaper price. You know, like that's it. Almost like if you ask 10 people that, like 9 out of 10 people are probably going to tell you go to Portal, right? Just like common sense. Yeah. You know, like you want a return quicker? Okay, go to the Portal.
Well, it's something you've referenced quite often is that dead money. You know, freshmen who aren't going to get onto the field, it's dead money. And might you just be better off getting a guy who maybe it's only for a year or two, but you know he'll be productive because he's already been on the field. And it really struck me, too, you know, relating this back to Penn State in a couple different ways. One was, you know, Peyton Falzone going to shifting to tight end. He, whatever he was paid, was going to be dead money at quarterback this year. Okay.
Right.
Now, also with the change in the redshirting rule, where, again, I'm going to stop calling guys freshmen, sophomores, they're first-year guys, second-year through fifth-year guys. That's the only way that makes sense. Well, now, even if Peyton Falzone doesn't get on the field as a tight end, you could put him out there on special teams. Here's a big, strong, physical guy. Hey, get something back for your investment in him right from the start, right from year one. That's even if he does go back to quarterback next year. Don't care. I'm getting something back for my investment, return on investment year one. The other thing I thought of as you were talking was Brock Riker, who's coming in as the Penn State center. Very talented, skilled player, but this is just a second-year guy. He's put in on quite a bit of weight and had to if he's going to be the player they want him to be in the Big Ten, right, Mike?
Yeah, I think when you see him initially, when I saw him initially, I thought he looked like he's not like a overwhelmingly like physically looking guy, right? But I mean, he's well put together, and since I think we even saw him on the show, I think he's put on at least 15 pounds of what they said that, you know, the total 30 pounds since he's gotten here. But to me, like the centers don't have to be like massive humans, right? They need to be smart. They're the quarterback of the offensive line, and they need to be athletic, right?
Yes.
And that's what Brock Riker brings to the table. You hear Hoosier, you know, told you on the interview how highly he speaks of him. You know, he thinks he's the best center in the nation. Then a couple weeks later, you know, Brock Riker is on the Remington Award list for, you know, the potential of the best center in the entire college football. So I'm excited about Brock. I think he's going to be the anchor to this new offensive line that's going to be coming together. But yeah, I'm really excited about him. What's pretty cool about it, like I didn't hear this stat before on him. He had 438 pass blocking snaps last year at Texas State. Not one sack. Not one.
Wow.
And like to me, like that, like even if there is one or two, if you go back to the tape, you can see, oh, maybe it was because it was a missed assignment. Maybe the left guard or the right guard, you know, had a missed assignment or something like that. And it ended up being like on him, but not one. So this dude's legit. And I, especially after you interviewed him, you and Chris interviewed him, you know, he's very likable. I'll be rooting for him.
And it was fun because that same night we also interviewed Dominic Rulli. So we got both centers.
Yeah.
And, boy, you can't help but root for both of those guys. If you got to hear them, the personalities, the quality of person that they are, and you could see, you know, that they were pretty tight, that they work together, they root for each other. It's fun to see.
You know, Dom is like one of the – he's the type of player that doesn't get talked about but are like the unspoken heroes on successful teams, right? They're the guys that don't want all the chatter. They don't want the limelight, but they're the guys that you want in your foxhole with you, right? Like those are the – like every team has them, right? You have the big names – right, but you have to have those guys that you go to the foxhole with that don't care about social media or the limelight. They just care about their team, football, and the brothers. And that's exactly what Dom really is. So that like having a guy like him as a reserve, you got to feel comfortable with, and you got to like that. So Dom Rulli, I consider my guy like a consider me kind of like a foxhole type of guy. So like I love guys like Dom Rulli.
Well, and I'll tell you what, if folks hadn't heard the story, the couple years ago when the fake punt, Luke Reynolds goes for the first down, huge play, and the way, because we got a chance to talk to Dom about it and how that works. The coaches, you know, going out, the coaches say, okay, we're going to do this. However, you know, the alignment has to be right looking at the defense. So you need a player on the field to make the final decision. Well, Dom Rulli is, first of all, he's on special teams. And I think playing guard, actually, on that special teams formation. He's the one who made the final call to do this, which I think speaks volumes about the kid. You're making a call that's the most important call of the game right there. And You trust this kid to make that call. That tells you, you know, he's a student of the game. He understands the game. He understands what you're doing. And just to finish up this story, the funny part was he's able to talk to the prime people, the center snapping the ball, everybody about acknowledging they know what the call is. He said the one guy who he didn't get that acknowledgement from was Luke Reynolds himself, who's going to get the ball. And he said, I'm just praying that he knows the ball's coming to him. And of course he did. But that is the kind of player that, yes, you want with you, not only as a tough guy, but a smart guy.
Yeah, exactly. That play reminds me of in the Sugar Bowl 2006, we're playing Georgia, and we go out there, and we're about to punt it the last this is the fourth quarter, and they had all the momentum in the world to come back. You know, we jumped on them, and it was like 20, it was literally like 28-0 in the first. But then at the end of the game, you know, they come back, this stacked team, and we go out there for punt. I'm one of those shields that gets like whooped by the, you know, freaking train coming at me. And they called, I think it was like called hammer or something. And it was like one of the, like, when you hear it and you're on the field, it's like the, oh crap moment. Like, oh, we're doing this.
it's we're real. Running a fake.
Like, this is big. And then, you know, we got lucky. It was a good call. We ended up getting the first down and winning the Sugar Bowl. But yeah, those calls, man, like what is going through those players' heads during that, it's funny because you talked about it in an interview. You know, they practice it every week, right? You practice those plays. But when you practice them, it's usually like the last play of like a period, a practice period. And, you know, it's almost like a joke. Not a joke, but like, you know, you just run it to run it just so like just in case. But like nobody really thinks you're going to run it. So but then when you run it, it's like, oh, man, we're doing this. It's pretty cool.
It really is. And the funny postscript to the story, and again, maybe I've told this story on the air, but I had met Dominic's parents the year prior, and his father was so very proud of him, obviously. And he talked about, well, you know, it was Dom who made the final call to do that. It was Dom. And he's talking about how great it was, how fantastic. Then getting to talk to Dom himself about it. And I told him, you know, about meeting his father and his father talking about it and all proud and all that. And Dom's response was, oh, he didn't tell you the other part. He actually missed the play because he went to use the bathroom.
It's a good story.
It is. And you just know that's a story that father and son are going to be talking about for decades. Okay. And it's really a special thing. And it's fantastic. Dom had a choice of coming back for another year or not. And it's wonderful that he did make the decision to come back. I'm sure, you know, offensive line coach, head coach, offensive coordinator, they're all happy to have him because it's an experienced guy. It's depth on the offensive line. I'm using that, Mike, as a segue for our next segment, where I want to talk to you a little bit about where are there still position battles, and at the very least, it's creating some depth at different positions for this team. We're going to do that right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B, empowered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free. Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello, welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by HVU Insider. I'm Jim Galante, he's Mike Villagrana. The guy in charge of HVU Insider. It's quarter number four of our show. And Mike, I tried to create a smooth segue there. I'm not sure how well I did it, but a little bit of a conversation about this team. We've got the season actually coming up, which is fantastic. We're looking forward to it. It's Marshall next week. But it feels like most of this starting lineup is put together. However, there are places where maybe the position battle is for the depth. It's for second, for the backup position. It's being part of two deep. Let's start. I mentioned Dom Rooley as being part of that with the offensive line. So let's start there. Pierce, Malachi Goodman is going to get the start at left tackle, but there's a couple guys still in the fight, and never do you go start to finish in a season with five offensive linemen. You need more. Who are the guys who are those depth pieces on the offensive line?
Oh, well, I think we talked about Dom Rooley. He's definitely one of them, right? And then we've had some guys that on the show, like Cool Cool, K2, who's a freshman, but he's a – you've seen him. He doesn't look like a freshman. He's going to be a guy that's going to be able to come in and hopefully get some time. Garrett Sexton is a kid that has been getting a lot of reps at tackle. Remember him, seeing him, he looked like a tight end at the bowling event, right, as a true freshman. And now he looks like what you want him to look like. So those are just two guys that kind of pop up top of my head when it comes to that. Because you want about eight, nine deep that can play. But it is interesting, coaching philosophy-wise, how Coach Clayton and Coach Campbell are going to rotate these guys. Some offensive line coaches and just head coaches, they don't like rotating guys a lot. Some coaches, they like a fluid rotation, especially if, your talent and your roster, has enough guys that you can do that. But it could mess it up, too. I know some people don't like that either. So it's going to be interesting to see how they rotate these guys. I think the first five is pretty solid. But like you said, you're going to get some guys dinged up just naturally, especially inside. So to have guys with experience like Dom Rooley coming in, I think he's really going to be able to help anchor some of those reserves and how they should handle themselves. So I feel pretty good about that. But like across the board, like I really don't see too many – position battles, right? I see more rooms like the running back room where it's like it's not just a Carson Henson. It's really kind of three guys, maybe four with Cam Wallace in the mix. Like the tight end room, that's a mixed bag of those guys. Like that's not really a competition. It's more how are we going to use these guys, right? And all these multiple guys that we have. I just saw that, Gabe Burkle, he doesn't look like he's going to be ready for game one. So does Peyton Falzone get some trash time at the end, do we see him on special teams? Did we see him with a couple reps? Because remember, Rapp's coming off an injury too. So I'm sure the staff wants to be careful with him. But offensive line wise, that is a curious one to see how they rotate. Defensive line obviously rotates. They want a good steady 8 to 10 guys that you can rotate in there. But linebackers, we're going to see probably fluid like two linebackers out there, Bacon and Tony. And then offense or defensive back wise, you know who we got. We're deep there with Zion, AC. I'm excited to see that nickelback position. That's probably the biggest thing I'm excited to see. It's not a position battle, but how are they going to use that position? I always think about this position, and I always relate it to the Honey Badger, right? In LSU days, Zion has the athletic ability to be that type of kid, right? He's longer, much longer than the Honey Badger was, but that position plays to that type of kid, somebody athletic, just a football player. Zion has that. Has all those traits to really maximize that position. So I'm looking forward to that. So, but, you know, to answer your question, Jim, I really just don't see too many position battles now. It's really just depth-wise, like you kind of mentioned.
Yeah, it feels like that's where the battles are. Wide receiver, you know, you have Chase Ole, Brett Eskelson. Hey, those are the first two guys up. And the question seems to be more, okay, who's going to be number three and number four? You know, Penn Staters are very familiar with Coby Howard, but, you know, hey, might they get introduced to Zay Robinson?
Yeah, you know. Zay Robinson's going to be a guy. You know, Jackson, I believe. Am I confusing him for the
No.
Yeah, he's the guy that's come up. We talked about him last week. He's a guy that name has popped up. That really wasn't a name that was popping up during the offseason. So that's good to have depth there. But I guess that's going to be, yeah, as Penn State fans want to know, who are going to be our guys, our go-to guys? You know, those clutch third and longs, you know, who are we looking to? You know, are we watching? Are we looking to go to Sal or we look to Sol or we look – like who's our guy? Who's our go-to guy, you know? Remember last year too now, like it was the Penn State – Indiana game, one of the best receivers in the country hadn't even played. And that it was the kid, the Becker kid, that came in because there was an injury. He wasn't even starting. He was an injury. So he started versus us and freaking crushed us. Right. And now he's one of the best returning receivers in the country. So there's guys on rosters that are going to pop up and they're gamers. They come out. When the lights come on, they come on. They play, right? And then we always talk about it with the quarterbacks. You just never know until the lights come on. But I think in that wide receiver room, hopefully we can find our Becker this year.
Yeah, of course. We definitely hope so. I want to get back to you mentioned some of the positions on defense. And I think it's a little bit easier on defense because you could have positions. I remember talking a couple of years ago saying, like Manny Diaz's last year, I felt like there were 20 starters on defense. You know, you rotated defensive tackles, you rotated defensive ends. I'm really curious about how things are going to work at linebacker. Tony Rojas has got to be on the field. We know that. Who's going to be with him? You know, will it be Abel Cooper or, you know, who's going to be the second guy there? But it feels like Caleb Bacon, the ability to put him at defensive end, that position change they made, was a little bit that effort. Hey, we've got multiple linebackers to get on the field. This is a way for us, even with two other linebackers already on the field, we could get Caleb Bacon in there on the edge, where sometimes he's played before as a linebacker. You're just getting talent on the field, though.
Yeah, because of the way that the defense is structured, you know, you're really playing two linebackers, right? And so you always have to have your Mike, right? Your Mike is your staple, and so that's going to be Cooper Abel, and then that's then you have your Will, right? And then your Will is usually your guy that's to the weak side or to the boundary, and that's going to be Tony, right? And then who's going to be that other guy? So is that going to be Zion at the nickelback? Is it going to be Cooper, you know, from the stand-up? Just him, came up at the beginning of camp, and it was good because you get more versatility out of your players and just gives more for D-Lynn to, you know, to put up against the offense.
Well, let's talk about the defensive line a little bit. And, again, like I said, I think you can look at defensive end and say we're comfortable, we've got four starters. I think the question is, could somebody separate themselves and kind of be the guy? But, you know, we know the names Camaju and Granville, who are returning Penn Staters. People know less about Alex McPherson and Akinna Iziogu. The coaching staff is familiar with them, of course. But how are they going to do that? Is that, you think it's going to be a pure rotation of those four guys along with Caleb Bacon? Or is this, you know, in those first couple out of conference games, it's still, we're going to find out who can do it, who's going to rise to the top.
Yeah, I see like a rotation of nine different players. And I think a lot of people don't talk about some of these guys because we don't know, right? Like they're new, they're transfers. One seems like he's as old as me and like they're hard to pronounce. So like, I just think naturally people aren't as interested in, but they're probably one of the biggest stories coming out of camp because it's just one of the most noticeable changes on the rosters when it comes to length and size and, you know, what we're doing versus what we've done in the past. So yeah, this position, I mean, you have Max Granville, who gets a lot of hype now, that's coming back off an injury. McPherson was a highly touted guy coming in. You know, Camaju, somebody that I think is going to be an NFL guy. And then you got the big guys in the middle. You know, you got Armstrong, Siale, and then Akinna. Akinna, I think, is like, he's, no, Siale is like the old man. But they're just like, they're grown men. They're big. They're big dudes in there. And with big dudes, you want to keep them fresh. So having a nine guys in there to rotate and keep them fresh is really important, especially on the defensive line. I was just talking about that about on the offensive line, but the defensive line, especially, you know, when, you know, we're all jacked up on those big third downs or fourth down goal line plays, you want your fresh guys in there that are going to be able to make a difference.
Well, that's what I was going to say, especially if you guys who are that size, it's tough to be in there every down, the ability to rotate them. But you typically, opposing offensive lines, they need to be in there every play, typically. So all of a sudden, if you could rotate guys on the defensive tackle side who are that big and that physical, you could start wearing down an offensive line also.
Oh, yeah, no question. That's kind of the long game battle that I like watching. Like yesterday, I forget what game I was watching, but I think it was North Carolina. I felt like North Carolina's defensive line just wore down TCU's offensive line. And by the end of the game, they just seemed that they had a good rotation of guys going in there. We saw the ex-Penn Stater, like you mentioned, Jalen Harvey in there, had an impact on the game. But that's just having fresh guys, that, and they're coming off the ball, like firing off the ball, just like they did the first snap of the play. That's taxing on the offensive line, right? Because those offensive linemen are usually in on every snap. If not, they're taking most of the snaps. So, yeah, that's big, Jim. And it's critical for defenses to have success is having a fresh defensive line in there.
Exactly. All right, Mike, that's going to be the last word for today's show. You and I are going to be back together with the HVU Insider. Make sure you take a look for that also. Thanks for tuning in today. Join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.